like to talk to us today about this word that I've wrote up here, atmosphere. I looked the word up in a old dictionary, and the only definition that it gave me was the definition that would describe the thing that all of the EPA people are concerned about. Our air that we breathe and the clouds up in the sky and the ozone layer and those, that's how it defined atmospheres. So it made me wonder if we have taken this word atmosphere in the last 100 years or so and began to apply it in a different way than it used to be. But I looked it up in a newer dictionary and I found this definition. It says, an interesting or exciting mood existing in a particular place, a prevailing emotion, tone, or attitude, especially one associated with a specific place or time. So, thinking about that definition, an interesting or exciting mood existing in a particular place, a prevailing emotion or a tone, not a tone as in a musical note, but a tone of a sense of presence or the what we sense sometimes about what our circumstances are. I believe that one of the reasons that we have structured our services the way we have is because we want an atmosphere where our hearts are in a position to receive what the Lord has for us. So we begin our services almost always with singing. And one of the things that is beneficial about singing is that if there is someone that comes in a little later than others, it can disguise or suppress any kind of stray noises or any rustling or something like that. Someone can come in during the song service and maybe I've seen this happen. You maybe not realize that there's as many people there, and then when you get up to take prayer requests or something like that, it's like, oh, there's quite a number here. Just because there was people that came in. But it has more, there's more about the song service than just creating a disguise for stragglers, okay? There's more to it. I believe that the Lord wants to anoint and bless in the song service, and when we endeavor to select the songs as the Holy Spirit directs us, it's more than just following a program. We want the Lord's Holy Spirit to guide us in our song service as well as everything else that happens here. So that's one of the reasons that we don't hand out a program that somebody else has already decided what songs we're going to sing and who's going to pray and all of those things. We want the Lord to be able to govern the atmosphere of the congregation. So our song service typically is something we depend on. All of us, we're all, not just the preacher, but all of us are depending on the atmosphere that is created by the song service, because we want it to be an atmosphere that's conducive for the message to be effectual in our hearts. All right? So I'm just thinking about atmosphere, not just for our service, but at the atmospheres that we have in our everyday lives. I want the atmosphere here in our service to be something that's conducive, that opens our hearts and our minds to receive whatever the Lord has for us. But I want our atmospheres at our homes and in our interaction with other people, I want those atmospheres to be acceptable in God's sight. I was thinking this morning about other examples of atmospheres. Have you ever noticed that there is an atmosphere when you go into a public library? How many of you have been to a public library? I haven't been in a long time. That's maybe unfortunate on my stand. But the last time I was there, you walk in, and what's the most outstanding thing about it? It's quiet. There's no music playing in the background. There's no loud discussions. There might be a number of people in there, but there's no political debates going on. There's no arguments going on. And if there is anyone talking, how do they talk? In whispers. They're talking quiet. They don't holler and say, "Hey, where's the mystery books in this place?" They don't say that. If they have a question, they walk up to the person, the librarian, and they ask them, "Where do I find a certain type of book?" Or, "I'm looking for a certain resource or something." So the atmosphere when we go in is conducive to what? Reading. It's conducive to maybe studying. The atmosphere is intended to be free of distractions. You want to go in there and get engrossed in reading or studying something, you should be able to do that. Why? Because that's what the atmosphere that people want in a library. That's the atmosphere that we are accustomed to, and we respect that. Okay? What about going into a funeral home? You know what I'm talking about? You go in maybe for a visitation. And there is an atmosphere there, isn't it? Even if it's you going to just maybe pay your respects to a family that you're not really acquainted with. Maybe it's someone you just worked with for a short period of time. And you just want to go and kind of express your condolences and it's not a real close relationship, but you walk in there and there's an atmosphere in the place. Generally, they have some kind of singing or music playing at what kind of volume? It's a low volume. And here again, hopefully people are talking in subdued tones. Not always, but that's what we kind of expect. But there's an atmosphere there. Lighting. Lighting in a funeral home usually is indirect. No glaring light bulbs. It's soft lighting. It's all done because there's an atmosphere that we expect. In that, it's an atmosphere of hopefully peace, hopefully comfort. That's what the idea is. They want to extend an atmosphere where the grieving family can receive some type of solace just from the atmosphere. Just from the atmosphere, many times when we come to the end of our song service, because of the atmosphere of it, we feel blessed in our hearts. We can feel encouraged. We can feel challenged. We can feel thankful. Just because of the atmosphere that's created during our song service. Now, think about another atmosphere that I was exposed to one time. And I'm sure this wasn't the most wicked place ever in the world, but as a young man, right out of high school, I worked for a locksmith. And one of the things that we did was go to commercial places and do repairs on their doors and whatever they needed. We've been into the banks and in their vaults and all of that. And we got a call one time to come, and I didn't know where we was going. I was just the helper. I carried the tools and supplied the extra muscle for the man that knew what he was doing. And so we got to this place and didn't have a lot of cars around it, but I immediately seen it was a place that sold alcohol. And went up to the door, and I remember that it was a hot summer day, probably July or maybe August, and it was hot outside and the sun was shining, and we went up and opened the door and walked inside, and you're talking about an atmosphere. It was so dark, I was afraid to move. Because I came from the bright sunshine, and we came in there, and you had to take everything you needed, and we needed a flashlight to see what we was doing. It was so dark in there, and then it was smoky in there, because people were smoking cigarettes, and there was some sounds going on, I don't remember what all, there was a jukebox playing and other things. And I'm going to tell you, there was an atmosphere there. And it was a strange atmosphere, thankfully, to me, because I'd never been exposed to that. But there was an atmosphere there. There were smells. There were sounds. The lighting. All of that created an atmosphere for a specific person, purpose. Now I want us to... I'm just saying that for points of illustration. I want us to think about the atmosphere that we have in our own homes. Did you know that in a home there can be an atmosphere that's conducive to happiness, conducive to how do you say that? Maybe this is not even a word. Congeniality. There's an atmosphere that can be there for that. But there's also can be an atmosphere of tension. An atmosphere of strife. An atmosphere of difficulty. So I'd just like for us to think about the atmospheres that we have at our home. And I'd like for us to, during the course of the little message this morning, I'd like for us to really examine ourselves. What kind of atmosphere do I have? Do I have an atmosphere that I want other people to know about? Do I have an atmosphere that I like? An atmosphere that I'm comfortable with? Or is there an atmosphere that I don't like in my home, in my everyday life? Sometimes it's in our work environment. And, you know, sometimes we change jobs because we don't like the atmosphere. It's not necessarily we don't like the work we're doing, but the atmosphere surrounding and prevailing in our work environment sometimes has caused people to say, I just can't handle this any longer. I'm going to change my work environment. I'm going to work somewhere else. I worked at a place one time where there was one person that wasn't in my department. He worked in another department. And every time that I would go and ask for materials or supplies to do my job, they would ask me why I wanted them. And if I told them why, he would tell me I didn't need that, I needed something else. So it was an atmosphere that caused me to always feel like I had to defend myself. And it created an atmosphere of arguments. And it was a joke in the place. If you got in there and you explained what you wanted and they told you, this person told you, that's not what you need. You need to go check something else or you need to whatever. It was a joke around the place to get caught in an argument with this person. It was just an atmosphere there. They just, everybody just expected this one person to always contest whatever you wanted and whatever you needed to do. So this morning, let's look at a few scriptures. Did you know that, at least I feel like, this is talked about in the scripture? So I'd like for us to turn to Acts, the fourth chapter. And we're not going to read a lot. I'm just going to kind of refresh our memory with the help of the Lord here. But in Acts, the fourth chapter, we have this chapter follows the account where Peter and John came in contact with a man that had been lame from birth. Wasn't ever able to walk in his life. And they came in contact with him. And they didn't have just money to give him, but they had healing through Jesus. And they told the man, I believe the Lord inspired them, they told the man to rise up and walk, and it was witnessed by a number of people. And the people came and crowded around Peter and John and began to question them, and they began to preach Christ to them. And it's not in us. It's because of Jesus Christ. And He's here for us, for each one of us. And that was a message they had for Him. In the beginning of the fourth chapter, we find that the leaders, the spiritual leaders of Judaism, you might say arrested them. I don't know that it was really called that. But anyway, they ended up putting them in hold, or kind of like in jail, over the night. And the next day, they all got together, all of them, I believe if you read the account, that were of the same mind, or the ones that had the same thinking, that Peter and John was causing disturbances, and they didn't like this message of being preached to about Jesus. So you might say they brought Peter and John on the carpet. You ever been called on the carpet? That's an expression we use to talk about how someone is going to tell you everything that you're doing wrong. So Peter and John was called on the carpet before these leaders, and they began to examine them and question them. And we'll begin reading maybe about the 11th verse, maybe 10th verse. Be it known unto you, this is Peter and John's explanation of why they were doing what they were doing. Be it known unto you all, and to all the people of Israel, that by the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, whom ye crucified, whom God raised from the dead, even by him doth this man stand here before you whole. For some reason, I got a little glimpse when I was studying for the message that this man was with Peter and John. I don't know if he was thrown in the same prison cell with them, or he just volunteered to be there when they were being examined. But it seems like this man was with them. And he said, this is the stone, or Jesus is the stone, which was set at naught of you builders, which has become the head of the corner. Neither is there salvation in any other, for there is none other name under heaven given among men, whereby we must be saved. Now, it says, now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, and perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men, they could tell that Peter and John were not educated philosophers. They were just ordinary men, fishermen to be exact. They marveled. They took note of this, and they marveled, and they took knowledge of them, or they began to comprehend there was something going on here that they didn't fully understand. Even though they were very learned, very educated, very capable at what they were schooled in, they realized this is something a little bit out of their league. There's an atmosphere about them that was different than what they were accustomed to. It says they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. There was an atmosphere about Peter and John, and they recognized here, these men were very, they had the authority. They were capable of of executing and passing judgment on people for being in violation of Moses' law and what that had developed into at their age that they lived in. And this wasn't their first time around the block, so to speak. And here they were dealing with Peter and John, but they recognized that there was an atmosphere about them. They had been with Jesus. And you and I know that if you have been with Jesus, there's a presence of God. There's a different atmosphere there. It's not an atmosphere of the world. It's not an atmosphere of the drinking establishment. It's not the atmosphere of a funeral home necessarily. But it's an atmosphere of knowing these have been with the Lord. So it's imperative in our walk today that we have been with Jesus, that there would be an atmosphere about our character, about our conduct, about the environment that we have an impact on, that others would recognize that God's atmosphere is there. I'd like to turn to Luke, the 24th chapter, and notice an account here that we're all familiar with. This is after Jesus had been crucified and put in the grave, and he had arose on the first day of the week and had been seen by some, and the disciples were in a state of disbelief. And we want to start reading here, maybe we'll start reading in verse 27. And beginning at Moses and all the prophets, this is the men had been walking in discouragement and dejection. This is one of my favorite stories in the Bible of people being motivated. So Jesus had come and was walking with these people, these two men that were walking from Jerusalem to a little village called Emmaus. And as they were walking along, they didn't perceive who Jesus was. And they were walking along the road, and Jesus began to talk to them about the Scriptures. And beginning at Moses and all the prophets, verse 27, he expounded unto them in all the Scriptures the things concerning himself. And they drew nigh unto the village whither they went, and he made as though he would have gone further. And they constrained him, saying, Abide with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is far spent. And he went in to tarry with them. So I don't know what it meant to them to say that it's toward evening and the day is pretty well done. And, you know, I think there was a melancholy atmosphere about them. You know, they were discouraged. Jesus had been crucified, and they were down in the mouth, as we would say. And it came to pass, verse 30, as he sat at meat with them, he took bread and blessed it and brake it and gave it to them, and their eyes were opened. Now, were they walking around with closed eyes before? No. There was a revelation that came to them, and they knew him, and he vanished out of their sight. I get this picture in my mind that at the very instant that realization dawned on their face and their countenance, like, that's Jesus. And at that time, Jesus just kind of disappeared from them. And now notice what they did. And they said to one another, did not our heart burn with us while he talked with us by the way, and while he opened to us the Scriptures? And they rose up the same hour and went back to Jerusalem. I thought the day was all done. I thought it was, I thought they were ready to get ready for bed, so to speak. But no, there was an atmosphere that impacted them. You know, the atmosphere that's in your home, the atmosphere that's in your life impacts those around us. And they rose up at the same hour and they returned to Jerusalem and found the 11 gathered together and them that were with. There was, I don't know how many, but at least the 11 disciples that remained, and there were, was there 20 with them? I don't know. But what were they doing? I'm sure when they came in, If they would have been paying attention, there was an atmosphere of gloom in the room. Right? Because these disciples were just as dejected as the two that had went to Emmaus. Jesus is gone. We thought he was whatever they were dwelling on. You ever walked in and someone was down in the mully grub, so to speak, and they were all dejected about life circumstances and the events that had happened to them? And all, oh, things are bad. It just goes from bad to worse. And if you only knew what I was up against. And you know, if you just allow yourself to succumb to that atmosphere, you'll be discouraged too. And there may not be one thing wrong with you, but you can get subdued and encumbered by that atmosphere if we're not careful. But I don't believe they even waited to allow the atmosphere to impact. They had been exposed to a different atmosphere. They had been exposed to something that invigorated them and recharged them. And they came, I just picture these two men come bursting into the room, and maybe somebody would have said, you know, just be careful there, you know. We're all dejected here. What are y'all jumping around so much for? I don't know what happened, but I see these men just come charging in and saying, hold on just a minute, I got something to tell you folks. So they came in to them and immediately, I don't think they stopped to listen to anything. They just came in saying, the Lord is risen indeed, and hath appeared to Simon. And they told what things were done in the way and how he was known of them in the breaking of bread. You know, I believe the atmosphere changed, don't you? So I want to say this to us today. If you think about the atmosphere, melancholy, discouraged, despondent, negative, dejected, whatever it is that you might not like about your life, about your home environment, about where you are on a daily basis. You think about that, and I want you to be encouraged that it can change. Because I believe that when these men came into the room and began to tell their personal experience with the Lord, I believe the atmosphere changed. I believe that there was disciples there. The only one that had just resisted the encouragement, I believe, was Thomas. You know, he was the one that said, I just can't believe unless I put my hand in his side and I put my hand, you know, see the scars in his hand and all that. But can you imagine the change of the atmosphere? And what happened? Luke's account is that it seems like in just a short period of time, Jesus was there too. And don't you know the atmosphere really changed then when Jesus came in? So I want to encourage you today that the atmosphere that you're contending with, and I want you to know that an atmosphere is a big thing to contend with. The atmosphere that you're contending with that causes you to be discouraged, that causes you to be dejected, that causes you to feel like there's no hope and there's no way out and all of that, I want you to know that it can change. But we're going to have to be with Jesus. You remember Peter and John? The leaders in the day, the ones that were going to be oppressive, they took note that they had been with Jesus. And when we have been with Jesus, I believe with the help of the Lord, our atmosphere, the one that we don't like, the one that is oppressive to us, I believe that right in the midst of where that atmosphere is, it can be changed for the better. It can be changed to where others can be encouraged. Others can be invigorated and motivated. Now I want us to look over in an Old Testament passage. And I want us to be very... Lord, help us to know how to develop this part of our thought today. I want us to be careful to realize that we have a responsibility to maintain an atmosphere for ourselves and for those around us. I think about children, and in our land, in our, the world that we live in, you know, there's an age that, whether you're filling out taxes or whatever you're doing, that children are considered dependents. When my children were younger, they're all old enough now that I can't claim them. Well, I guess I can still claim Drew because he's a student. But there's an age and some other requirements that have to be in place for you to claim children as dependents on your taxes. All right? But there comes a time that they're not classified as dependents anymore. But not just for a tax advantage. Children are dependent on parents, on guardians, on the home that they live in, for many things. And one of the things that children and young people are dependent on is an atmosphere that's conducive to growth. An atmosphere that's conducive to physical growth, and an atmosphere that's conducive to spiritual growth. I'm thankful for the atmosphere that I had as a young boy, but I want you to know that no matter how perfect you think the atmosphere was that I grew up in, it was not without ripples, okay? And there was a time in my youth, as I was developing and I was still a dependent tax-wise on my parents, that there was part of our atmosphere in our home that was not ideal. It was not good. And I really struggled with that. And it caused me to really examine myself. And it caused me to wish that it was different. I can remember those feelings as a young man. And I was early teen, 13, 14, somewhere along in that. And there was an atmosphere that was not good. All right? So I'm not speaking to you today from some kind of background of knowing that everything was perfect all the time. And I know that all of us live ordinary, everyday lives, and there's going to be things that's not perfect about our atmosphere. There's going to be things that's not perfect on daily basis that we can't avoid. No matter how good our intentions and no matter how much we try, there's going to be things from day to day that the atmosphere swings in a negative direction. Okay? But what I really want us to consider today is the long-term effect of our atmosphere. And what kind of atmosphere are we trying to produce and have in our homes? I'd like to turn to 1 Samuel, the 16th chapter. And I want us to notice the story of Saul. And we know that Saul was anointed the first king, and I believe that of Israel. And he was a man that was outstanding in his physical size. He looked the part of a leader. And I believe that the Israelite people accepted him, approved of him as a leader. But he failed as a leader in God's eyes. And Samuel came, God's high priest, the prophet, he came to Saul, and Saul did not respond the way that he should. So we want to pick up this story in the 14th chapter, or 16th chapter, the 14th verse. And this is the end result. It says, "But the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. And Saul's servants said unto him, Behold, now an evil spirit from God troubleth thee." It's important to realize that if we are disobedient to the Lord, and that's what got Saul in trouble, those of us that are adults, if we are disobedient to the Lord, that the atmosphere that we have control over will change. All right? So Saul's said, he was disobedient to the Lord, and it said, "The Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. And Saul's servant said unto him, Behold, now an evil spirit from God troubleth thee." I'd like to read some of comments from Wesley, John Wesley's comments on this verse. He says about the word departed, "God took away the prudence and courage and alacrity." I don't know that I said that word right. It means ability to think clearly in high-pressure situations. Anyway, "and other gifts wherewith he had qualified him for his public employment from the Lord, that is, by God's permission, who delivered him up to be buffeted of Satan." And his comments on the word troubled is stirred up in him unruly and tormenting passions, as envy, rage, fear, despair. He grew fretful and peevish and discontent, timorous and suspicious, frequently starting and trembling. I would like to tell us today that if we allow ourselves to get in a place that's disobedient to the Lord, that we will suffer from the very same attacks from Satan. We will become peevish. And what that means? Difficult to please. Nobody can please you. Did you know that that's something that the devil wants to impose on all of us? And it'll impact the atmosphere that is around us. Did you know that envy and rage, those are things from the devil? And if we allow those things to come into our lives because we've been disobedient to the Lord, it will disturb our atmosphere in our homes, in our lives, and in the arena that we have some impact on. We'll have fear, we'll have despair, we'll be fretful, we'll be worried, we'll be discontent. We'll be timorous like Saul was. Timorous means that you don't have any courage. It's hard for you to get direction. You'll be suspicious, frequently starting and trembling. All of these things will plague us if we're disobedient to the Lord. But if we're obedient, what this commentator said that the Lord had blessed him with was prudence. That's the ability to make good, wise decisions and have direction in your life. He'll bless us with prudence. He'll bless us with courage. He'll bless us with the ability to make precise decisions under pressure. He'll help us with that. You know, that's one of the things that's difficult, is to know how to make the right choice when the heat's on. When the children are disobeying. When there's somebody that's, you might say, contesting the atmosphere that we want to create and we want to have in our homes and in our lives. And somebody says, I don't know why you want to do this, and I don't know why it has to be that way. And sometimes we have to ask God to help us. How do I respond to this? We need a keenness and an ability to make decisions about the outcome of every one of our circumstances. But we find here that when Saul became disobedient to the Lord, that there was something else came in. I felt like depression came in on Saul. And you will, depression is a terrible thing that destroys a good, wholesome atmosphere. I'll go on and read some more. Saul's servant says in verse 16, let our Lord now command thy servants, which are before thee, to seek out a man who is a cunning player on an harp. And it shall come to pass, when the evil spirit from God is upon thee, or when you're falling prey to Satan's devices, because you have been disobedient to the Lord. He says here that he shall play, this person that we'll find, he shall play with his hand, and thou shalt be well. He'll create an atmosphere where you feel encouraged. Did you know if you walk into a place and they have, I don't know what else to call it except happy music? If they have instrumental music that's got a good tempo to it, and maybe it has a little melody that's catchy, it doesn't have to be a complex thing like maybe some music. That's not just a simple little melody. Many times, and maybe it's with a stringed instrument or something like that, like not a harp necessarily, but you know the atmosphere there can be kind of jubilant or happy or upbeat and all of those things. And the servants of Saul said, let's find us somebody that can really play the harp well. Bring him in. And when you're getting to feel all moody and depressed and the atmosphere is getting toxic, you ever heard that? Ever walked in a place where there was a toxic atmosphere, didn't know what was going to happen next? Maybe we'll tell the person that's going to play, it's time to start playing. I don't know what's fixing to happen. And they can start playing that harp and change the atmosphere so you won't feel so bad. And where you won't do some things that's irrational and all of those kind of things. Then answered one of the servants and said, behold, I've seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, that is cunning and playing and a mighty valiant man, and a man of war and prudent in manners, and a comely person, and the Lord is with him. Did you know that's the most important thing to creating a right atmosphere is having the Lord with us? If we don't have the Lord with us, we can be a master musician, and we won't have the right atmosphere. But we must have the Lord with us. And when the Lord is with us, I believe with His help, we can do the things that create a good, wholesome atmosphere. I want those that's in my atmosphere to feel safe. I want them to feel secure. I want them to feel that it's conducive to spiritual progress. I don't want them to feel like it's a toxic atmosphere, like they're afraid maybe to ask genuine questions. I'm not talking about turning a questioning spirit loose, because that can be part of a bad atmosphere. All right, but I believe it's healthy for us to ask questions for the sake of understanding. Lord, help us to have an atmosphere that's healthy. Don't we want our children to be healthy? Absolutely. Do we want them to be spiritually sound? Most definitely we do. Do we want them to be able to be successful in life and be happy and what we call normal and all of that? Yes, we want all of that. But did you know that if we have an atmosphere that's not conducive to that, it's going to be very difficult, right nigh impossible, for them to grow up and be what we want them to be. And maybe we tell them this is what we want for you. So I want to challenge us today. Lord, help us to know how to do the things in our own life, have the Lord with us, so we can create an atmosphere that is what we want. what we want our young people to have and our fellow man to have. You know, we live in an age where religious organizations that don't have the Lord's Spirit with them do a lot to create the right atmosphere. You know that? We hear new accounts all the time of things that other organizations do to try to create an atmosphere where people will want to give their money, will want to stand up and shout maybe. And all. They do a lot of things to do that. And I'm not interested in trying to create an atmosphere here that causes people to do things that's not really led by the Lord. But I am interested in having the Lord with us. Every one of us having the Lord with us. And not just for our services' sake, but Lord, help us to know how to have the Lord with us in our homes, in our everyday lives, to create an atmosphere for our little children that's coming on will know how to do the things that will bring long-term happiness and success for them. Or they'll know how to study, know how to apply themselves, know how to work, to know how to think logical thoughts. You know, our world bombards our young people with an atmosphere of suspicion, an atmosphere of questioning all authority. And one of the definitive characteristics of the current generation is they always ask why. It's created by an atmosphere that we have that prevails in our society. Not just when they're two, but all the way through their lives. They want to ask why. I'm not saying we can't ask that question, but it's because of the atmosphere. I was raised under a different atmosphere. But we are desperate today to have the Lord with us, so our atmosphere here is conducive to godliness in this place. But I want the Lord to bless us in our everyday lives, our work environments. You know, we can impact our work environments. I know that sometimes we have an environment and an atmosphere there that we feel like it's toxic. And we feel like we can't go on, and we feel like we just got to do something to make a change. But I want to encourage us today that you can do something about that atmosphere. You can change it with the help of the Lord. Maybe you can't make it perfect, but you can impact it. You can create something there with the help of the Lord that subdues some of that. I don't know what else I can say. I just want us to be challenged today to not be satisfied with a bad environment, a bad atmosphere, something that is pulling us down and pulling those around us down. And you know, when you can't please someone ever, I'm not talking about just displeasing them in one thing. If you can't ever please somebody, there's something wrong there. There's something that can be changed. Look for a way that you can be pleased. If I'm the one that no one can please me, Lord, help me to change something. If there's something about me that's always negative, that can't see anything good in anything, Lord, help me to change something because I want the atmosphere to be conducive. Lord, help us. You pray for me.